All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming back. This is the Rings of Power Reddit Talk for episode 3. Today we have on as a co-host Kelly Rice of Happy Hobbit. Kelly, if you want to say hello and introduce yourself. Or Kelly disappeared. System, if you want to say hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm System of Cells, another moderator here. Very excited for our guest today. Hope you enjoy it.
As Will said, I am Kelly, but on our little web show, I'm known as Keely. And my sister and I have been producing Happy Hobbit, which is just a fun way to try to encourage you to incorporate Middle Earth into your daily life. We've actually been doing it for 10 years now, which is insane to me. But I'm also a fantasy author and screenwriter and a writer in general. And some of you may have this massive tome called Middle Earth from Script to Screen, Building the World of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, which I joyfully worked on in New Zealand with Weta Workshop's in-house author, Daniel Falconer, and a lot of the creatives behind the original trilogy, and a lot of the folks who are now also contributing to Rings of Power. So that's been absolutely fantastic.
And last but certainly not least, our guest today is Maxim Baldry himself, who plays Isildur on the Rings of Power. Hello, brother.
Hello. Thank you for having me. So exciting.
Before we get started, can I just ask, so you finally have premiered for all of us an episode. How are you feeling right now?
I feel like it's a very surreal moment. You know, I've been holding on to this job, this secret for about 3 years. On Monday, actually, 3 years since the day I got cast. And it's a big relief to finally see it all come together. And yeah, and get back on TV. So it's been a long process, but a very special one, and one that I've, you know, learned a lot from professionally and personally.
Well, I appreciate you coming on here and spending your time on the subreddit today. Kelly, if you just want to roll right into it and start just hitting him with some hard-hitting questions, feel free, girl.
They're not that hard-hitting. But I imagine, you know, you stepped into a role where the character is equally revered as a hero, but also as a failure. I imagine that was somewhat challenging, but also really fertile creative ground. Do you want to speak to that at all?
Okay, so I mean, I'm gonna kind of zoom out and talk about sort of human beings, and I think they're sort of fallible in nature. And I think Isildur is one of, like, a very kind of well-rounded human character who's able to make mistakes, who's also able to do heroic things. And that really excited me about the character. He was portrayed in the movies as this sort of failure who ruins everything. But, you know, we're starting at the beginning of his journey, and he's got an incredible journey. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of heroic things. And I think that maybe somewhat down the line, if I do my job right, you will see a human who has both the capacity for good and evil and is balanced in that. But, you know, it just so happens that the sort of the events that kind of lead to his downfall are just overwhelming, you know. And maybe, you know, that you can see that the reason why he does what he does is because he's lost so much and loses so much throughout the series. So, you know, you could almost perceive that he's doing, or in his own mind, he's doing the right thing. And he's never just kind of just suddenly evil. You just see him kind of using that as reparations. And he actually says that himself as a were-guild. So, yeah.
That, you know, and what you just touched on there speaks in some ways to, I think, Tolkien's wide and enduring appeal, you know, in terms of celebrating both the flaws and the heroism in humanity. And, you know, what else is there in Tolkien that you think draws so many people in for so many generations?
That's exactly what kind of drew me personally into Tolkien, is that there is, you see yourself in a lot of storylines, and it's like snippets, it's moments. And, you know, I almost kind of go to Tolkien as therapy, understanding the world, understanding sort of the way that I live my life, how it can be different. And also it's amazing to have a human experience while watching fantasy. I think, you know, playing Isildur, I wanted to bring it back to the, you know, yes, he's an epic character, but he's also a very young, hungry, lost individual. And so, you know, I hopefully you can see yourself in some aspect of him, because I certainly see like aspects of myself in a lot of characters in Tolkien. And I think that's why it makes it so timeless. It's escape, and it's also, I mean, I don't know why I'm using the word therapy, but I do find it like fantasy therapy. You know, you just lose yourself to the storylines and you kind of immerse yourself in this world, and it's an escape.
I find Tolkien incredibly therapeutic. One of the showrunners at some point said, and I found this to be true in my Tolkien circle, is that most people who really, really come to Tolkien and stay came from a place of grief or trauma. And I think it's, you know, that universal message of even in the darkest of times, we can find light. And it's not negating that the darkness is an ever present, you know, thing in our lives, but that there's something greater than that.
I always kind of view it as a sort of, whenever it's dark in my life, I approach and immerse myself in Tolkien and the work. And there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. I see a new way and a new kind of optimism in the work that is able for me to kind of transform and grow.
That's beautiful. So do you feel like there were some real world or real life experiences that you've had that you drew upon to play Isildur?
Yeah, so I think when we meet Isildur in the first season, he is sort of a misfit, but not in a traditional sense. I feel like he's a misfit who's trying to do the right thing, who honors and respects his father. And I think that the sort of relationship between Elendil and Isildur is one of duty. So, you know, he is doing what he is supposed to do. The societal expectation of him is to follow his father, become a sea captain. But he is sort of, there's like a yearning in him for something else. And it's not really present what it is. Is it the west of Numenor? Is it the fact that Galadriel arrives on this island, which sparks his imagination? But something about him sort of opens up in the sort of, you see him kind of not really completely cohesive in Numenor. He's an anomaly. And I felt like a misfit a lot of my life, you know, wanting to be an actor, kind of from I'm a hybrid of nationalities. And, you know, fitting into society or what is expected of me was difficult at points in my life. And I just drew upon that. I kind of approached Isildur the whole way through feeling, rather than kind of being intellectual about his, about the way I wanted to approach him. So I always came through feeling. And that I put into that first season of Isildur, which is someone who is trying to find a way to fit into society by being different. And, you know, he causes a lot of pain, I think, but it's unintentional. His pain is because he's hurting as well, which in turn, you know, leads to friction with his sort of family dynamic. His friends are confused. They're like, dude, we're living on the most beautiful island. We're about to graduate and become sea captains, and you're ruining everything for everyone. He's struggling to articulate it. You know, and I feel like I put all of my personal experiences growing up into him. And, you know, that's what my intention was for the character, to make him very human and make him as relatable as possible.
I think that really strongly comes through. And, you know, as characters who have never left Numenor, it's hard to have that perspective of, oh, no, we live in such a wonderful paradise. You know, I think that's part of growing up, is leaving where you're from and experiencing some of the world and returning.
You're going to definitely see that in Isildur, and you're going to see the sort of tragic elements that maybe shape him into the person and the warrior and the man that he becomes and that we all know down the line. So that's mm-hmm. what's really exciting about this, is we have the sort of creative ability right now and the creative license to shape him from the ground up. So it's actually what I always find, and what I love about Tolkien as well, is like the destination is not as exciting as the journey. And Patrick and JD, the showrunners, have this difficult task of, you know, knowing we have to hit certain signposts that Tolkien has laid down for us, but it's how do we get there? And the how is all about season one, season two, and shaping him, and, you know, having experiences in through the story that shape him. And he, in the end of the day, he is a tragic character. It's a tragic story of a man who loses a lot, you know, and how does that affect someone?
And I'm literally looking forward to going through that journey with you as an audience, because there's something to be said for, you know, the tension and dramatic irony of those of us who, you know, have been previously exposed to this material, knowing what's ahead for the character and sort of biting our nails as we watch his journey.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of weight of expectation comes in then, because people have a sense of ownership over him because they've read about him, because they've watched him in the movies. They have a sort of an idea of who he is. Now, my job as an actor was, what do I think? And, you know, everything is subjective. And I had to own, I can only do the Isildur I am connected with, that I feel and understand him to be. And I guess I did it with the utmost respect for Tolkien. He was the person who I was thinking about the most. I sometimes think, like, what would Tolkien think about the casting? What would Tolkien think about my interpretation? I'm speaking. You know, it all came from his pen, and I just really hope that I've done him proud and did it with the utmost respect that it deserves.
So far, you've definitely achieved that. And, you know, I think that your process that you just outlined is very organic and, you know, lends to such an authentic performance that, you know, a TV show is not a book. I don't necessarily think it's fair to carry over those expectations to someone breathing life into a character. And I personally am really enjoying it.
Oh, thank you. It's actually lovely to hear that. And there's a lot more in store for him as well. Like, we are just at the beginnings of his story. He's not yet a man. He's not a warrior. He is someone who's trying to find his sort of place in society. And you know that feeling when you're like, what am I meant to do? Like, I think everyone's had that sort of moment in life where they're like, what am I doing? Is this what I want to do? Is this who I'm becoming? And then that sort of realization, I think everyone's lived that moment. And I think that is what Isildur is encapsulating in the first season. So it's definitely a take on like a father and son relationship and duty that kind of interweave in this sort of Numenorean world.
So you mentioned Warrior there, and without fishing for spoilers, was there any special training you needed to do for this role?
So I mean, obviously, you know, he's a sailor, so we had to do a lot of sailing. I had to learn how to sail, and I'm not very good on the water as it is, so that was a bit of a challenge. But Isildur also struggles to communicate very well with other human beings, and I think his language is through animals, and his horse Beric is probably his best friend and someone that he cares the deepest about, and I had to learn how to ride horses, and they go on a lot of adventures. So all I'll say is maybe him and Beric end up in some pretty dangerous things, some dangerous places with the wrong people.
Oh, so we're only three episodes in, and already is, you know, a huge, you know, nature is my spirituality, and I love animals, and that's part of my huge draw to Tolkien. I am so happy with how many animals that they've incorporated into the show, and so I'm absolutely delighted to hear that Isildur is of the same ilk, and that there's more to come.
There is more to come, and I think that sort of the language that a sort of character can share with an animal, especially a horse, it's so there's something so tender and sweet and profound in that relationship. I think sometimes you don't even need words to describe it, you know?
I don't think there are words. I grew up on the back of a horse, and there's such a spiritual bond that you form with a horse that I'm sure you experienced as well.
Yeah, I changed, I think, after kind of learning how to ride and spending time on the farm in Henderson, which is where we were learning how to ride, which is in the beautiful countryside of New Zealand. And that was a very special moment for me personally, because I just spent time in nature with a horse and just trying to communicate and connect. And it was quite sad actually leaving. It was that sort of relationship. It was lovely. And I think that also I put into Sealdor. Sometimes I don't think he can articulate what he's feeling. And I think if you always could articulate what you were feeling, you know, life would be amazing. And I don't think he's able to do that yet. Maybe he never will. That's what I'll say. I think that's also, there's conflict in him.
But I love that there's a continued thread there then with his descendant Aragorn and his relationship with horses and through bonding with animals. I think that's really beautiful.
You'll be in for a big surprise and a lot Ooh. Of treats down the line. Yeah, if you're like that. I mean, I love that moment where when Aragorn falls off the cliff and then his horse kind of wakes him up and there's this love between them. And I think that I've definitely put into the show as well.
So the Numenoreans seem equally connected to the landscape and to the sea, and they have that phrase, the sea is always right. What do they mean by that?
Well, they're a seafaring nation, and so they have a very strong, powerful naval fleet. And as you know, Isildur doesn't actually say that line. He is forced to say it. And I think that the sea is always right, meaning that their sense of duty rests in the sort of success of their fleet, and that they have to trust what is out there, what finds them. So I guess it's a sense of sort of structure for them, how they live their lives. And everyone says that line. It's quite like, I think Elendil says it as well in the show, the sea is always right to Queen Miriel. And Isildur is going, hang on a sec, why are we all saying this? Why is the sea always right? Maybe it's not. And I think the seeds of doubt are planted. You just see the seeds of doubt already in his head at that point. And it's sort of questioned. I think that we're questioning whether or not there's also a schism going on in Numenor as well. So there is, you know, Pharazôn and the King's Men. And then there's also the sort of pro-Elven Numenoreans. And there's the beginnings of this sort of breakdown between a very cohesive society. And the sea is always right, as I think any is an embodiment of that, which is like, this is the way that Numenoreans have always lived. And you see Isildur going, hang on a sec. Why?
Yeah, not so ready to surrender control completely to an element of nature.
So, Maxim, we've seen a lot of pictures of you online hanging out, like in real life, with Lloyd Owen and Emma Horvath off set. What is it like getting to work with them as actors on set? Like, where does that chemistry come from?
Actually, you know, we got along very well together straight away. As soon as we met, we spent Sunday lunch. We had Sundays together where we'd hang. Emma and I went to Rotorua. We went to the South Islands in New Zealand. We did a lot of adventures like hiking and kayaking. I wanted to create a very family-like environment, and then they were very gracious as well. I wanted to do the same thing. But yeah, I think it's important to have a, because when you meet someone, you're playing, all right, we're father and son, you know, that relationship is very deep. It has the roots are very long and thick. And how do you convey that without spending time together? So we kind of all decided that we would kind of do a crash course in family building. And that was lovely. And they also became like a support network for me out in New Zealand. So we did become kind of like a surrogate family. And I think that that relationship really does come across well on screen as well, because, you know, we've lived through experiences already together, isolating experiences in New Zealand. And, you know, we poured all of that experience into the work that we were making.
The reaction online for Numenor as a whole, just people being able to see it for the first time on screen in motion, has been overwhelmingly positive. What was that like for you each day, like waking up and actually like heading to set to be in these crazy sets?
Oh, I remember the first day on set with Wayne Yip. We were shooting in the Coromandel, and it was a private beach. It was absolutely visually striking. I went into the makeup chair, I got ready, and I just took one of those like director's chairs and I put it down on the beach and I just watched the sunrise. And I realized that this was the first time we're ever going to see a Numenorean coastline in the show. And it just kind of blew my mind. And this whole epic nature and scale of the show just blew me away. It was a privilege, and I feel very honored and grateful to have had the chance to bring this story to life and bring the first, you know, Numenor, a never before seen island, Tolkien's Atlantis, to the screen. And, you know, they there was no expense spared. Like, they built a whole city with a harbor attached, and, you know, it took you about 10 minutes to walk through. And yeah, I think that was the most kind of pinch. That was definitely the biggest pinch me moment. My inner child was jumping up and down every single day on set. And I never stopped feeling, even now talking about it, I'm still very, very, very grateful.
Well, you brought up Wayne Yip, and I was going to ask you, you know, what was it like working with him? But also, were those the first scenes that you filmed for the show? Were they the ones that we saw here?
Yeah, they actually were. They were about the first shot for me was with my friends as I got off the boat, and we were pulling the boat in, and I'm standing in a line. And there's actually that line, the sea is always right. That was my first day on set. So it's very, very cool watching it back, because it was filmed so long ago now. But Wayne Yip was a very collaborative director, and very, very kind and calm, which is lovely, especially considering, you know, there's drones and about four cameras and everything is just amped up to the max. And Wayne was a lovely, calming influence for all of us actors, and listened and played, and yeah, creatively, I feel like I could do a lot of great work with him. So I'm very grateful for that.
Now, earlier on, when we had less information to kind of pore over, those posters came out showing everybody's hands, right? And we had a lot of detectives here on Reddit who were looking at scars, birthmarks, even veins, trying to figure out whose poster belonged to who. Your poster was one of the first that people were able to confirm. The fandom gets into some crazy things. For you, what was the craziest thing to learn about the fandom?
I think it's just the sense that people have lived with these characters for a lot longer than I have, you know? And so there's a sense of, I mean, I love the fact that people are obsessing over the smallest of details. I think that's also how I view, when I love something, I obsess over it. And then I love dissecting the smallest of moments, the smallest of looks. Oh my God, he did this, he did that. Oh my God, the camera panned at this moment. Who is that? Why, you know, and I think something about Tolkien is timeless, and it lives on, and we want to make every single moment the most special it can be. And every day is a gift on set, working with Patrick and JD, who are weaving magic, just like Tolkien himself. And yeah, it's just lovely to be part of a well-loved fantasy world that I also grew up, you know, loving and obsessing over. I used to run around as Boromir in the back garden, pretending I had arrows being shot through me. And I'd kind of ask my mum and dad to keep watching this. They'd be like, yeah, all right, Maxim, okay. And I'm like, one day, Dad, I'll be in Lord of the Rings. And he was like, all right, son, but the films have already been done. So on to the next fantasy world then. So that it's just, it feels very like connected that I'm in it, and I feel very lucky. And counting my blessings every day.
That's fantastic. You must feel a bit smug about that.
he must be. He's like, no way. No way you in Lord of the Rings. I'm like, I am. I remember that conversation was really great. It was very great.
What a dream come true.
Literally, it is a dream come true. And I'm living the dream. So, but saying that, you know, there is still a lot of, it's hard work, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially because of the work that we have to do, it's very physically demanding. And also, like, it's a long shoot. So mentally, you know, you have to keep up consistency and energy throughout very long shoots. It's not like a quick 4 or 8 week shoot in and out. You know, you are shooting for quite a long period of time. But that's also great because we have time. And that's something that I never, ever had on a sort of a smaller scale job. It's quite quick and fast paced. Whereas with Rings, you know, we have 3 days to shoot one scene. So I felt very lucky being able to do that and for them to kind of give us time.
I'm sure that when you're pouring so much of yourself into the job, it can feel a little bit like you're creating in a vacuum. And so I'm wondering what it was like when you did get to go to San Diego Comic-Con and you've gone on these world tours and you've gotten to connect with fans like myself. You and I met briefly at San Diego Comic-Con. But I'm just one of millions of people who have lined up to not only see the show, but to see the cast and to listen to your interviews and everything. How does that feel to finally get some communication? And I imagine that's some of the fun part.
It's a big relief that, you know, it's being so well received and people are loving it. And it's this overwhelming sense of gratefulness. And to be able to communicate about something that I've worked on for so long is so lovely. And it feels very like an emotional release of energy. You know, when you've kind of been working on it for so long in a vacuum, kind of your castmates are probably the only people you can really talk to about this with. And now being able to go, right, okay, so this is Isildur. This is who he is. And this is who he's becoming.
And did you, so forgive me if I'm pronouncing her character name wrong, Isildur and Arian?
Arian, yes.
Arian. I really loved seeing their bond of support and trust in episode 3, even though they seem to be very different personalities.
They are very different people, yeah.
Yeah. So what is, can you tell us more about their dynamic as siblings?
They're very different people. And I think Eärendil in a way is almost assuming the role of mother because we are all grieving the death of our mother. And she is being kind of forced into a role that she's not really ready for, I guess. And I hate to use the word squeaky wheel, but I'm going to use it for Isildur because he is that sort of problem child in a family, rather than, he's in a way selfish. He's taking a lot of the energy up from Elendil and from Eärendil because he's like, I want to do this, I'm not content, I'm not happy. What, so maybe you could see that, you could say that she's slightly overlooked in our dynamic, in our family, but between them there's definite love. Like, I think he really cares for her and loves her, but he's just got so much on his own plate right now. And I think whenever someone who's young on the cusp of adulthood goes through that, you know, they do tend to look inwards and they're not very self-aware of how their actions may impact others. And I think Isildur, you know, you see that with his friends a lot of the time, and they go like, dude, what the heck? And I won't go into spoilers, but like, you know, he tends to kind of leave a slight path of destruction wherever he goes. And Eärendil is definitely on the receiving end of that at times as well.
Now, Isildur seems to be yearning for the western shores of Numenor. What is there for him there?
Well, you know, they're all missing a brother at the minute, Anarion. And no one knows where he is. So potentially he might be there, but I can't really probably go into that too much. But yeah, there's a missing family member, Anarion, and we believe that he's in the west of Numenor. And the west are people who are sort of the faithful, the beginnings of the faithful. They are all there.
Yeah, and it started like Anarion might have had something to do with sealed orders. Let's call it discontent with his current path. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah. Very interesting. I really can't go into too much on that.
No, we won't ask you to do anymore.
So forgive me on that, yeah.
And by the end of the episode, because of that, tensions seem to be, you know, rising between yourself and Elendil. Can you tell us any more about what's the driving force behind that strain?
Yeah, so Elendil is sort of asking Isildur to graduate and become a sea captain, so he can finally become like him. And I think there's a sense of almost like a father who, you know, has seen the world, is living within the sort of confines of societal expectations, and you go, this is what you're meant to do, son, right? Follow me. And in that last scene in the third episode between Elendil and Isildur, Isildur goes, I'm thinking I might defer. And, you know, I think defer is also Isildur's not going like, oh, you know what, screw you, I'm off, you know, I'm out of here. He's going, let me just take a moment for myself to find myself. So there's a sort of breakdown in sort of communication between father and son. You know, Elendil goes, defer. Like straight away, it's like, that's the worst. It's a catastrophe. So there's an inability to understand one another. And I think Isildur is trying to break free of constraint. He wants to be free. He doesn't quite know what he wants to do. There's a yearning in this, a romantic notion of something else out there. But he's trying to respect his sense of duty. So he's trying to be an honorable son, but he's not perceived that way. And I think throughout the season, you'll see a breakdown in that.
Well, I got to say, it was a pleasure having you on here. It was awesome to see Numenor for the first time, see you in character, ignore my best friend, Emma Horvath, and go directly. Thank you so much for your time and just joining us today and taking notice of our subreddit, our little place on the internet, and being able to answer some questions for you. So I really appreciate that.
It's a very special show, and it feels lovely to still be able to talk about it with you guys that are so excited. And yeah, let's chat more.
When you're back on set for season two, you've got to give all the horses love for me.
Of course, I will do.
Thank you, man. Hope you have a great day. Thank you
so much.
You too. Bye.